Welcome to today's episode of Sex in the Bull City. I'm Celine Malone. I am a clinician here at Bull City Psychotherapy. And with me today is Marcus.
Hello, Marcus Walton. I'm an intern here.
Yeah.
And I'm a student in North Carolina Central University in their Master's of Clinical Mental Health Counseling. And I'm taking new clients.
Yeah. So am I. All right. So today I think we're going to wrap up today our series about purity culture. This is part three. We've talked a fair bit about what purity culture is, some of its impacts on people. And it's funny, after the last episode that we recorded that afternoon, I was reading something on a blog. And I said, oh, here's the thing about purity culture we didn't even talk about. And so I wanted to come back and do another episode. And that topic is how purity culture impacts our view of healthy relationships. Whether we are viewing our relationship, whether we are learning how to view our relationship as healthy or not, and kind of what indicators we receive in purity culture and what indicators are true signs of relationship health.
Yeah, I think, you know, our field makes a lot of use of asking the question to guide value judgments: what is healthy? You know, and it's great. It's really helpful. It's a really helpful, I think, at root sort of secular and so widely accessible kind of value and way to measure. Whereas, you know, I think in purity culture, because it's guided by fairly traditional and even fundamentalist sort of religious sort of value structures, it says, like, what is God's true design? What is right? What is good? And I think what is good is kind of that thing where it has its definitions that are kind of more going towards, again, the sort of rigid structure of what is the design at the heart of the universe somehow. And then what we have and what we use more often, which is a much more flexible thing that says, like, what is healthy and what does that look like? You know, and we have metrics for what looks healthy and what it looks like when people are thriving.
Right. You know, we talk about in purity culture, healthy relationship, you're not having sex. I mean, I remember when I was doing marriage counseling, or premarital counseling with my first husband, and the only question I remember them asking was, so how far have you gone?
Yeah.
Like, using the bases metaphor that they used. How many, like, what base would you say you two are on? And that was the only thing they asked us to change. You know, that they, until we got married, there was an expectation that we remain pure.
Yeah.
And we were not having sex, but they wanted to have very specific opinions about where we were physically with one another. I don't recall anything else that they had to say, but that was very important to them.
Yeah. When I think about purity, you know, there are these weird ideas. Well, they're not all weird, right? It's like, at a certain point, science stumbled upon germ theory, and like, doctors started washing their hands and people started getting a lot less ill. But there's, you know, and so there are these ways that, like, cleanliness and the trying to protect porous barriers, right, from germs is something that it's bound up in some ways with health. But the purity that is at the heart of the way that purity culture thinks about health seems to feel like, again, like, sex is something that is, like, it's violating something that shouldn't be violated in a relationship, unless, of course, you're married. And then, as we said in previous episodes, it's kind of magic wand, you know, no longer impure.
When I was in Bible college, I remember one of my theology classes. We talked about the scripture that talks about becoming one. And that there was some, he used the word magical.
Oh, really?
He used the word.
Yeah. Well, at least he was aware.
He was aware. that it was a magical bringing together of two people to make them one person.
Yeah.
And that if you are trying to make yourself one with more than one person, that that is fundamentally breaking something in you as a person. Yeah. And that if you have become one with one person, you are automatically, that needs to be it for life. That's the only person that you can become one with. And that was why the safeguard of the marital bond was there, to protect that magical oneness theologically in front of God.
And so, you know, it makes sense when you have a sort of a metaphysic, like a spirit, a sense of the spirit, where like this kind of unique spiritual connection that happens in sexuality is one that it's, you know, there's theological language of the, like, the unitive purpose of, like, sex, that it the two become one, right? And there's all that. And like you said, it's like, well, how could then people become one with someone else, you know? It's like this forever bond, and it makes sense within that. It's just that it's a very limited understanding of what sexuality is.
I agree.
Yeah.
And
or can be.
I also do not believe that this concept of purity somehow protects a relationship from any other threats. That it is what makes that relationship healthy. So now you're going to treat each other with respect and trust and care and kindness. That those things are just kind of automatic because you have remained pure until the point of marriage. And that's 100% how it was presented to me.
Yeah. It's, there's something, you know, you're calling it magical. It's also somewhat contractual, or what was it that God made with Israel?
Covenant.
It's kind of covenantal in its thinking. It's like, all right, as long as we adhere to these rules about our sexuality, we will be the beneficiaries of God's grace.
Yes.
You know, and like, again, it's a protective thing. It's like, it's, everything will be okay, you know, and we'll be safe from the chaos of the universe or whatever, if we follow God's rules. And then people really get their hearts broken when they follow all the rules, and then they get married and they keep following the rules, and
it doesn't work out as promised.
It does not work out as promised,
which happens. Statistically, around 50% of the time.
And it's, I mean, talk about religious trauma. It's like, because you hit the wall at a certain point, and then your sense of betrayal is cosmic, and it's theological. You're like, God, you know, like, well, it's either or both. Like, I have somehow failed God. God has somehow failed me, or some mixture, you know, in between. Been there.
I for sure dealt with that. I think, you know, one of the other things that we were talking about as we were preparing for this, when we are learning what makes a relationship healthy, almost no one receives explicit instruction.
Yeah, that's true.
And maybe you get a little bit of premarital counseling, but again, it's just there to make sure you're staying pure. At least that's all I remember of it. I'm sure there was a workbook.
Yeah.
But I think we learn from those who model relationship around us. Usually parents, family members, mm-hmm. maybe a couple of other important adults, maybe in the church, in our personal lives. But we learn by catching. Mm-hmm. I caught how he talked to her mm-hmm. about this issue.
You absorb it. Yeah.
Right. And you don't get explicit instruction. Look for these things. This is what makes it healthy. Mm. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what is mm-hmm. a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
You know, if we were taught that purity is the metric, mm-hmm. and you and I are saying that is an insufficient metric, mm-hmm. how do we measure what a healthy relationship looks like?
I feel like I'm trying to think of why was there that sort of conspicuous gap? And I think it must be in part that there's some sense that, like, well, you just love each other, you know, the mm-hmm. way we all kind of love each other, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, fruits of the Spirit, which are good. There's some good stuff in there.
There's some great stuff in there.
See if I can rattle them off.
There's a song.
I can't think of them.
I always miss a couple in the middle, but it's love, joy, peace, patience, gentleness, self-control.
Kindness, goodness.
You're right.
Faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control.
Teamwork.
Hey. All right. Yeah, there's some good stuff in there, but it's not, it's just a list. I mean, and it's like, what does it actually look like to do the work of trying to love each other?
That's right. Know?
In the particular demands of a romantic relationship, which is it's a level of intimacy that's unique. It is.
It is.
Yeah.
That's part of the intention.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that comes to my mind when I think about healthy relationships, I once heard a clinician say that their metric in an intake with a client for whether they predict that client is going to, or whether the couple is going to make it or not,
mm-hmm.
is kind of this dividing line between respect and contempt.
Mm.
That if they detect contempt from either partner,
yeah.
that is such a profound lack of respect.
Yes.
That's not a couple that's going to make it.
Yeah, that's huge. Isn't that a Gottman thing? The four?
It might be.
The four horsemen?
It might be.
Have you heard that before?
But that makes me think mm-hmm. of respect mm-hmm. and what that actually looks like.
Yeah.
You know, I think some people, especially in the religious communities that I grew up in, respect was what you had for your husband.
Mm.
And that just meant that you did what your husband said.
Right.
And that's really not what I'm talking about when I say respect.
Yeah. And not a sense necessarily of mutuality there, right?
Right.
But there's a certain kind of respect that the husband is afforded that the wife is not.
Correct.
Right. Yeah.
And I think to describe the respect that I'm talking about,
mm-hmm.
it's consideration for the other person as a human.
Mm-hmm.
Treating them like a human first, not like mm-hmm. a person fulfilling a role for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's your experience of the use of the word respect?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely link it to dignity
mm-hmm.
and that it's, I kind of think of it in relation to sort of hallowing someone's mystery too, that the person across from me, this is a nerdy and unnecessary thing, but I like it, and you can look it up if it interests you. But there is an existential philosopher, Martin Buber, who talked about the I-thou relationship. Mm-hmm. And what he meant was, in my encounter with the other, I'm encountering someone who I don't know the fullness of who they are or what they want. And so there's something in respect that's almost like I'm in awe of the otherness of this other person, because there's so much there I can't just know, you know, from my own projections of who they are to me, you know, that they have this otherness that is, it's substantial, you know.
I like that. The word that comes to my mind, which is a value of mine, is curiosity.
Ooh, uh-huh.
Coming to another human, curious about who they are, what values they hold and why, how they move through the world, and not trying to control any of those things.
Ooh, yeah. And that can be hard to do in that relationship where it's just like, oh, we're... the two have become one, right? If that's the idea, it's like, I do want to control you, because like we're like connected in this really deep way. And,
yeah. You know, I think much of my idea about respect when I was growing up was about control. Mm-hmm. It was about the people who were entitled to control, got the respect.
Yeah, it's submission to authority, right? That's, you respect. I mean, there's some good here, for sure, but there's something really, honor thy father and mother. It's this, there's someone who's older than you that knows better, that, like, you must submit to. And then the weird ways that gets passed down through patriarchy to honor the husband.
Right. So the kind of respect that we are espousing here is maybe outside the traditional definitions of respect. What other qualities of a healthy relationship do you value?
Yeah. I like what you said about curiosity as a part of respect. I think what comes to mind for me is, like, and this is certainly the fruit that can be born of mutual curiosity, but I think to delight in and to be delighted in. That someone I'm going to be connected to in this deep, intimate way, really just, and the same for me to them, is that there's a lot of just pleasure taken in who they are.
Yes.
Just who they are, you know? And maybe it's the respect that we're talking about is kind of a precondition for the discovery of that delight, you know? If you're really going to know who they really are, and receive the gift of that delight, then you really have to have a deeply curious openness to discovering that.
One of the other descriptors I would use of a healthy relationship is a sharing of values. Not necessarily that you have to have the same priority on different values, or the same opinions about everything, but if you have a fundamental difference of values in a relationship, it's really hard to move through the world together, because you're going to make such different choices from one another. And one of the rules in my house is, if it's important to you, it's important to me. And that's true for my husband. That's true for my child.
Yeah.
I value what they value. And they with me.
Yeah. That's really lovely. I love that. It's, there's something in that that's, I hear this kind of willingness to take on things. It's almost like a joyful welcoming of, and I mean this lightly, but like almost a burden. Like, I will take on myself this thing that you value, even though it's like I don't particularly care about it in the same way, but I'll take that on. And then when it comes to mutuality, it's like, you will take on things that are valuable to me, and we will sort of help one another bear those.
Yes.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
I think that's an important part of a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. What else would you put on the list for healthy relationship stuff?
I mean, so same basic, but a lot of these things are basic, right? You know, I think honesty. I think trying to be as honest as possible, which doesn't mean always being blunt. It doesn't mean having, it doesn't mean not having boundaries.
Right.
So it's like, there are certain things we can keep to ourselves or share with the right person that may not always be our partner, right? But I think a commitment to trying to be honest, which also entails a commitment to circumspection and self-awareness. And I think practices of circumspection and self-awareness. Because we can only share with other people from ourselves if we know ourselves. And so there's work that goes into staying in touch and connected with ourselves so that we can offer that in openness to another.
I'm really liking the idea here about transparency around your own emotional stuff, but also owning your own emotional stuff. My husband and I just had a conversation today where I realized there was a situation in which I was trying to manage his emotions. And that's really outside the norm for us. That's not something that we really do. We've both learned from previous marriages that that doesn't work for us. And our conversation today, I realized I was the one initiating this owning of his emotions, and it was making me uncomfortable. I couldn't blame him for that. I was taking it on myself that I was, you know, concerned about his emotional reaction to, let's say, me sleeping in on a Saturday. That would be, you know, I was worried that that would make him upset or uncomfortable because he didn't know, you know, when I was going to get up, and he really likes certainty. And owning my emotions in that and allowing him to own his, not trying to manage each other's stuff. I think that sense of being transparent around all of that is really a difficult part. And I think this is a place where therapy is helpful, because we don't always know what, you know, what we're doing with our emotions. But that's what came to my mind there.
Yeah. I like that. And is, was it, I hear in that something I've heard from different clients I've had talking about their relationships where they're walking on eggshells. And it's because they are, there, and I see that as managing their partner's emotions.
It is.
Right? Where 100%. It's just like, oh, I don't want to upset them, and I don't want to have conflict, and I'm trying to avoid any, you know, unpleasant interactions.
Right.
You know? And so, which is, it's, there's something very qualitatively different there than what we said just a few minutes ago about taking on the values, where it's that sort of the kind of joyful, you know, giving of like, it's like, I'm going to take on this burden. This is like, no, I'm going to take on a burden you didn't ask me to.
That's right.
And that actually doesn't benefit you for me to take on.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think there's also a sense in which we have to be considerate of one another's feelings. Mm-hmm. I don't wake up in the morning and think, I don't care at all about my husband's emotions today.
His problem. That sounds like his problem.
Right. Really not what I'm advocating for.
Yeah.
But that I can't stop being myself. I can't make myself smaller in order to prevent him experiencing discomfort.
That's well said. Yeah, making yourself smaller. Yep.
And I think that's a common thing that we're taught in religious communities.
Yeah.
Make yourself smaller. He must increase, I must decrease.
Oof.
That there is some degree of making yourself smaller that is somehow holy or somehow glorified, and it does not make for healthy relationships. Healthy relationships, you get to be your whole self, or you're withholding a part of yourself from your partner.
That's right. And I think when we are living from a place of fear, there's a sense that the available space is impoverished, that there isn't enough space for all of our feelings.
That's right.
Isn't enough space for both of us to get what we need. There isn't enough space. There's, you know, and it can be hard work to reorient to living from a place of abundance, you know, to think that there really is enough. There really is enough for us.
Together we can create enough space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the work of a relationship, is creating space for each other to be your whole self.
Yeah, I love that. That it's that part of what the work of love does is it expands and makes more space.
You know, I'm not a super fan of the idea that we help our partners to become the, you know, better versions of themselves. You know, I'm very much you're in a partnership with the person that they are, not the person you wish they were.
Yeah.
Kind of person.
Like radical acceptance, not, you know, fixer uppers.
Right. We are not here to fix anybody. But I think there is a sense in which we do create this environment for the other person to continue to explore being who they are. And that is a part of a healthy relationship. That is the ideal. Everybody gets what they need.
Absolutely. Yeah, a framing I read recently, it was in the book Polysecure, which I recommend. Wonderful book. But it talked about how we we function first as a safe haven for one another, where there's safety, radical acceptance. And then, sort of from that foundation, we become a secure base. And the base is sort of ventured out from, and that's a sense of home to come back to. But again, it's that you can sort of widen your horizon of being, of who you are from that. But it starts with a radical acceptance at the bottom.
I think that's beautiful. I like to say I kind of accidentally fell in love with my husband.
That's usually how falling in love works, you know, you trip over something.
I was very actively not looking for a relationship. We were just having a casual time, and he was dating somebody else, and you know, we were having this polyamorous experience where he and I were just friends. But we said very early on to each other, I will be a safe space for you. Whatever else this becomes, you know, there's no pressure for this to become romantic. There's no pressure for anything here to develop into anything. And we have been super successful at being a safe space for each other. I have never felt so safe in my life. And that sense of safety that you're describing is exactly what made me fall in love with him.
That's really cool. It's, yeah, safety doesn't sound very sexy, but it's pretty friggin' invaluable. You know?
Well said.
Yeah. One other note, I was just, this has been rattling around in my brain on this topic of trying to define what does a healthy relationship look like? But, you know, one thing I think we said in an earlier episode was that something that you learn in purity culture is not to trust your own body. And I kind of love, like, I love everything we're saying that is, like, trying to name, you know, like, things that we can look for. But I also love the idea that, like, coming to love and trust your own body means that you can, in many ways, trust your intuition and your attraction, right? And your sort of felt desire. You trust your feelings, you know?
Crazy talk.
Ooh, that's hard. That's hard.
You're not lying.
And, yeah, that is a wild frontier there of, I think, the kinds of connection we're talking about too. Trusting your body. Trusting the things that, you know, aren't conditioned and structured by words, you know? That's always like, oh, whew, that's scary. But very exciting.
Very exciting. Yeah. I'm really appreciating that this has become not just a list of go look for these things.
Yeah.
You know, I think my question, and I don't have answers for this. How do you put this in a dating profile? I will be your safe place.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be... I don't know what that would attract. I'm not so sure I would find that.
Some people would find it creepy, but the right, you know, people are very sensitive to creepy vibes online for good reason.
for very good reason.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think I have more than one client in this space trying to find a partner in our society set up the way that it is.
You know,
one of the things that I think was really great about the environment from which purity culture grows is that you spend a lot of time with people in church. You really get to know people in your community. You have a community, and people around you are kind of vetting somebody that you might meet in that space.
Yeah.
You know, if they don't have a good relationship with the people in the community, if they don't have a good reputation, you know, that's kind of a warning flag.
Yeah.
And we really don't have spaces like that if we have stepped away from some of the religious communities we grew up in.
That's an excellent point. And that is, yeah, I can speak as a single man on the apps, you know, that like, yeah, it does feel like we're just like pirates on the open sea, you know? It's just, it's hard. It's a hard world. You know?
It's rough out there. It's rough out there.
Yeah.
So if anybody has solutions there,
yeah,
let me know.
I like that. Yeah. Where we're landing is we want to be secure and safe people, you know, that are open to connection and not scary pirates.
Not scary pirates. I think I like that as a landing place for us today, talking about being the safe place for other people.
Mm. Yeah, I do too. Hmm. Well, this has been a journey.
It sure has.
Through purity culture.
It has. It's really given me a lot to think about. Yeah. And I really appreciate you coming and talking with us about it.
Yeah, this was super fun. Yeah, I'll be continuing to think about purity culture. You know, mm-hmm. as we've noted, it's got a long shadow.
It sure does.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are both accepting new clients.
Yeah.
Very low cost.
Oh, yeah.
sliding scale, what is it, $10 to $30?
Yeah, about.
Less if you need it.
Less if you need it. That's right.
You can find us at bullcitypsychotherapy.com.
That's right.
All right. If you need us, reach out. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.